Join me, DJ Fife, for Drum and Bass with DJ Fife, Monday nights at 8 o'clock on the Valley Free Radio, 103.3 MHz, Northampton, Massachusetts. Each week you'll hear a live DJ mix of Jungle Drum and Bass that highlights the biggest and best from around the world. Listen in for DJ guest mixes, locally produced tunes, and news for the Jungle Massive. That's Drum and Bass with DJ Fife, Mondays at 8 o'clock, part of the Monday Music Night on the Valley Free Radio.
Wednesday nights, you might tune in to the Warm Heart of Africa to hear the funky, sinuous rhythms of Afrobeat. Or the pulse of Algerian rhyme music. Or the desert trance of Tuareg blues. Or township jive from Johannesburg. Or catchy soukous beats from the Congo. Those are just a few examples of what you might hear from 7 to 9 every Wednesday night right here on Valley Free Radio. Join me, your host, DJ Vinyl Scratch, on the Warm Heart of Africa, a celebration of African and Afro-diaspora music, culture, and history, delivered with a groove.
When you get home at night and switch on the lights, do you feel good about the source of your electricity? Did you know that you can choose to power your home with 100% local, clean electricity? It's easy. Sign up for New England Wind or New England Green Start without any contracts or commitments. Just go to www.massenergy.org/CET. You have the power to say no to the standard mix of polluters like natural gas, coal, and oil. Make the switch to clean electricity produced right here in New England. Nonprofit organizations, the Center for Eco-Technology and Mass Energy Consumers Alliance, have partnered to bring you this effective way to support local, green jobs and make Massachusetts a cleaner, better place to live and work. Show your support for local clean energy by signing up today at www.massenergy.org/CET.
You say, I got to love my neighbor. Well, not really. Who would you say my neighbor is?
Who are my neighbors? Tune in to Out There to meet some of them. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5 in the afternoon with me, Ruthie Woodring. Come with me and my recorder to meet people and plants and think about ways we can share the world. That's Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton. Archived editions of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. Get out if you can. But if you can't get out, tune in. And Out There, that's today. Thanks for tuning in. I've been traveling the last 3 weeks. Went home to Kentucky to see my family. And so today's show is a bunch of clips from that trip. And let's see, you'll hear me and my dad talking about naming things after people. You'll hear about possums and pawpaws, bikes and religion, of course, some religion. And this blacksmith trying to build a large anvil, a very large anvil, and more mixed in. So I took the bus, well, actually a few buses to get there like I usually do. And on the way, well, one of the things I noticed was I was looking out the window and I saw the Welcome to Delaware sign. And then there was a second sign attached below with the governor's name. And I was just like, you know, besides being an additional expense and using unnecessary resources to change the sign every time someone else is elected, the sign just strikes me as one more way human beings are trying to mark their territory and lay claim to nature and elevate our status in a world where, like, by weight, we only occupy, like, one gazillionth of the planet. Oh, and then on the bus, immediately across the state line, we passed a brick building which says Newcastle School on the side with a man's name. It kind of reminds me of Northampton's elementary school in the southwest corner, whose name is a mouthful of people. That gets me to thinking about the cities that have the mayor's name on the welcome sign. I lived in Chicago for a bunch of years, and I can tell you, the signs around town reminded me who the mayor was daily. Does Northampton have a welcome to Northampton so-and-so mayor sign? I hope not. Who the elected leader is, it seems relevant, mostly if you've got a message for that person and you're trying to figure out how to contact them. But the sign doesn't have contact information, so why bother with a name? It bothers me how many things are named after human beings, like from convention centers to streets to entire cities. Now the bus passes the Welcome to Maryland sign. So-and-so, Governor. Here's a travel game to play. How many states can you think of which are named after a person? There's Maryland, of course, and others come to mind. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Louisiana, Washington, District of Columbia, Virginia. Oh, I guess we can count West Virginia, too. Those are entire regions named after one human being. It seems to me more logical to name an area after a physical feature of the land. Well, I'm glad I live in Massachusetts, which is an Algonquian Indian word. It comes from the Wampanoag word Massachusetts, which means by the range of hills. And then there's even entire continents named after human beings. America? Which leads me to wonder, who was Mr. Earth? One local thing that bothers me is the way people often refer to the Coolidge Bridge instead of the Connecticut River when talking about the dividing line between Northampton and Headley. I want to do something to stem the tide. And I remember one day a couple of years ago, I was in a city committee meeting, and it was proposed to put up a sign on the new Leeds rail trail, naming the section after a certain city councilor, now deceased, who had supported the trail. And I spoke up in adamant opposition, and it was as if I had devalued the man's work. No, I just didn't want to have a man's name forever associated with the land. It just seems idolatrous to me, trying to name things in our own image. And not just about human beings, but about specific fallible human beings, and many long dead. And there's billions yet unborn. People will come and go, but the land remains. Is there any limit to our egos, or to our lack of contentment with who we are and our place in the world? Let's stop the name calling. Well, when I got to Kentucky, and I was visiting with my parents and some other family, and so I asked my dad what he thought about it.
So, Jim, when it comes to naming things after people, any guidelines or things come to mind?
Yeah. Well, the best guideline, especially if it's a politician or even a non-politician, it's best to honor them by naming them in memorials or highways if they're dead, because they may do things in this life that are not honorable. In our local Pineville, we have a bypass named after a former mayor. He's still alive, and he's in federal prison for election fraud. And so it's hardly an honor to either the town or to him to recognize him. And it's his second conviction, but he got pardoned by the governor for the first one. There's some tribe out there somewhere that I read about a long time ago. And they had three kinds or levels of life or existence. Mm-hmm. You're either alive, or you were alive dead, or you were dead dead. Mm-hmm. There were three categories. Now, most people only think you're either alive or you're dead. Mm-hmm. But these people had a real truer picture of it, I think. Because we know what is alive, and we think if you're dead and gone, then you're really dead, dead. Mm-hmm. Once you're out of memory, you're dead, dead. If you're dead and forgotten, you're dead, dead. So if you want to keep yourself alive, you give money, and Rupp is still alive. Mm-hmm. Because the name, the memory is there. And this is also standard Christian doctrine on the Lord's Supper. Mm-hmm. Do this remembering me. Because when you remember, you bring Christ to life. When someone is still in our memories, they're still alive.
Mm-hmm. So would you consider people giving money so things could be named after them? And would you connect that with the fear of death?
No, I connect with self-glorification. I want to keep on living. I want my name to be famous. I want my, you know, I want to be known. I want to be remembered. Another way to look at alive, living, dead, and dead, dead. I tell a little story. The chief executive of some corporation would take a Canadian fishing vacation every year, and he just wanted totally out of it, and he'd go up in the Thousand Lakes, you know, Minnesota, somewhere, you know, with his canoe, mm-hmm. and nothing, no GPS, no cell phone, you know, he was done. He was going off for meditation and fishing. Well, the first day out, he crossed the lake to his campsite, and this thunderstorm comes up. Turns up a canoe, and he gets caught in the gear and drowns. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is he alive, dead, or alive, dead? To his family, he's alive in their memories. Mm-hmm. They're acting like he's alive.
Mm-hmm. Before they find out, you mean?
Before they find out, yeah. Because it'd be a week or who knows how long. We wouldn't come back and then start a search.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's the same. If you're going down to Jacqueline's, you know, you're going down to Jacqueline's sleep tonight.
Yeah.
Once you close the door, are you alive or dead? You're here or not here? No. Mm-hmm. You're alive in my memory.
Yeah. I'm alive until you find out otherwise.
That's what the memory does, and the naming of things sort of is that same kind of way, that if you can keep the history alive, or when you go doing research for genealogy, you're bringing your whole family back to life. Uh-huh. You get connections with living people, mm-hmm. whether we're living or that are living. If your physical body has been eaten by the worms or cremated, whatever, uh-huh. you're still present.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems like death is the great equalizer. But when the people that have the most money can make themselves alive, dead, the longest,
uh-huh.
it's not so equal anymore.
That's right. They're still in your face. It's still Rupp Arena. In church circles, it's called hagiography. That means the making of saints. Mm-hmm. And this is how in Roman Catholic Church, you have to qualify. And you got to do good deeds and do all other kind of things. You got to be dead. At least Roman Catholic Church has it right. Uh-huh. So the good people are still alive. There's some bad people still in our memories, you know, or that keep being recreated by the media or something.
Yeah.
Streets of gold, when we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing that will be. When we all see Jesus, we'll sing and shout the victory. When we all see Jesus, we'll sing and shout the victory.
That was little Alan Jackson, and the other clip before Alan was at my mom's church. And, oh gosh, my dad talking about some of the local news reminded me of something, another bit of local news. When I was in Kentucky, Apparently, a guy escaped from the Bell County Jail, and for his escape vehicle, he grabbed a school bus sitting around, a Bell County school bus. Well, he was discovered across the county line in Knox County with a Bell County school bus. I think he went back to jail. But anyway, what do I have next? So when I was in Kentucky, there's this place called Pine Mountain Settlement School. It's an environmental education center in Harlan County. I was there doing some trail building with a group of people. But they have lots of programs where people come in. Sometimes it's school groups that come in and do things like night hikes and orienteering. Or they have also classes in caning chairs and building stone walls. They also work with Grow Appalachia, which is a program to help people grow their own food. One of the people that I talked with was Bucky Field. He's an environmental educator there. He works with the youth and other visitors. When I was there, there were a group of 35 sixth graders from a middle school near Louisville. They were there. So they have a cafeteria there at the school. And one of the things they do there, they just try and raise awareness about food waste. So I asked Bucky to talk a little bit about that and how they work with the youth on that.
Yes, I wonder if you could just tell me, like, when groups of kids come here and they come to their first meal, what do you tell them?
Well, what we do, our school groups come here. Most of them come from Louisville or Lexington. It may be anywhere from 30 kids to 80 kids. And at the end of each meal, we have a container that they scrape the food that they don't eat or waste into. And we weigh the waste after each meal. And really what I try to tell them is that it takes a lot of resources to put food on your plate. You know, the time, you know, you grow the food, you plant the seeds, you grow the food, you harvest the food. And by the time it really, all the middlemen, by the time it really gets to your plate, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of resources to put that food on the plate. Now, if you waste food, of course, it's biodegradable. It's not really, it's going to break down. So from a standpoint of that, it probably doesn't hurt a whole lot. But if you take the food and don't eat it, you're really wasting a lot of energy, wasting a lot of resources. And there are a lot of people in the world. There's 7.5 billion people in the world. And it's projected that by the end of this century, there'll be close to 12 billion people in the world. So the way we have wasted in the past may not be something that we're able to continue in the future as time goes on. You know, population is exponential growth. So an example would be water. I mean, if you look at California, water is something that is probably, there's a good chance it could be in short demand in the future. Okay, I mean, California, they're having the worst drought they've had in like 500 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and for instance, milk takes about 3 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk. So if the kids are going to use milk at breakfast, they're not going to drink it. They're just going to use it for the cereal. We encourage them to share that rather than throw it away. You know, and I tell them that milk weighs about 8 pounds per gallon. So the idea here really is to just plant a seed into their mind or create some type of awareness. And, maybe I shouldn't be wasting so much food because of the resources. Mm-hmm. And we have some schools that really take it serious. We've had several schools this year that have had zero waste every single meal all week long. And we don't want them to sit there and, you know, if they have a plate full of food, just gorge themselves, just make sure they eat it all. We try to tell them, if it's something you're not going to eat, don't take it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, watching the group that's here this week, I've been really impressed with how little food they've been throwing away, because that's a lot of kids, right? And kids are sometimes known to be picky eaters, but it seems like the sort of competition part seems to work with the kids.
Yeah, and I think sometimes they might carry it a little too far. Sometimes kids will stand up there at the waste container. If anybody comes up with food, they send them back to their table. And we don't really want that, but yeah. But still, it's they're inspired, and that, I think, is pretty important. So we're creating an awareness with it.
That was Bucky Field from Pine Mountain Settlement School. The next thing I asked Bucky about was possums.
Tell me about some of the benefits of possums, because they kind of get a bad rap.
Yeah, they do get a bad rap. See, everything has a niche. Everything has a job out there, what they do. And I was told by one of my college professors that, you know, the importance of scavengers. If you didn't have scavengers, if you didn't have decomposers, within 1 year the earth would be covered by a layer of dead things 1 foot thick. So you need things that break down dead material, and possums scavenge. They are important in that role. Some other cool things about them, really. Evidently, from what biologists can tell, they're immune to snake venom, and they relish copperheads. So if you live in an area that's prone to a lot of copperheads, like this area is, having a possum near your home is kind of a lucky thing. It's a benefit. Now, you know, all mammals carry rabies. They all can. But possums have a low body temperature. I was told about 84 degrees, which is too low to really support the rabies virus. And a few years ago, a biologist at, a herpetologist actually at Fish and Wildlife, John McGregor, he told me that in the last 35 years or so, there's only been one documented case of a possum having rabies in Kentucky. Of course, they have a lot of teeth, too. Possums have 50 teeth. It's more teeth than any other terrestrial mammals.
Good thing they don't have to go to the dentist.
Yeah, and so they give this impression of being very ferocious, and I'm sure if you reach down and grab one, it's going to bite you. But possums, they feign death. It's called playing possum, but they're not really playing. They actually, it's a physiological response. They actually pass out, almost like fainting. So that is a defense that they have, you see. And where I became interested in, I really like possums, and where I became interested in them, when I took a training, it's called CIG, which stands for Certified Interpretive Guide. There's an association called NAI, National Association of Interpreters. When I took that training, we had to do a program, and the lady I was working for at the time, her name is Laurie Davis, and she was very interested in possums, so she kind of inspired me to be interested in them. And I did my program on possums.
Oh, wow.
And you can say possum or opossum. And that, I really became interested and realized how neat of an animal that actually are.
That was Bucky Field, an environmental educator from Pine Mountain Settlement School in Harlan County, Kentucky, talking about possums. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM in Northampton. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. A few more things I want to say about possums. Bucky talked about how they're scavengers. Well, they're mostly scavengers. They also do eat animals like chickens at times, or mice or birds. But when they're scavengers, sometimes they also eat the skeletons of the dead animals because they have such a high need for calcium. And another thing he said, when they're threatened, you know, they like faint. Other things they might do when they're threatened. They might run or growl, belch, urinate, and defecate. All right, so next, I have Gilbert talking about pawpaws.
Gilbert, what do you got there?
A pawpaw, and it's next thing to a banana.
Uh-huh. What does it look like?
Well, it looked like a potato. With slick potato.
With a green skin?
Yeah, with a green skin.
And the inside?
Is yellow. I reckon it's yellow.
Yeah, it's yellow.
Tastes sort of like a banana and other fruit. Uh-huh. I really don't know what it tastes like, but it's really good.
Uh-huh.
And the big seeds in it. Just don't swallow them.
Uh-huh. What's your favorite way of eating them?
Just break them open and just squeeze them out.
Uh-huh.
And get it as it comes out.
Suck them out of the skin?
Yeah. Now, there are different kinds of pawpaws. Different flavors.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because like some of them up north tasted different than like some in the south. And I had a catalog, and they 5 or 6 different flavors of pawpaws.
Uh-huh. Now, you told me you had like 100 trees at your place.
I'd say 100 or more.
Where
they just come up from root.
Uh-huh.
From the big tree, they just come up, pop up.
Do you get fruit off of a lot of them some years, good years?
Well, so far, the squirrels get them before I do. But they do. The squirrels get them while they're green,
uh-huh,
sort of before they get ripe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's hard also to get seed to come up.
Mm-hmm.
We've had seed planted them in shed. You know, he gave us a lot of seed.
Yeah.
We could not get any of them.
That's what I've done. I kept taking seeds from up here down to Louisville,
uh-huh,
and I plant them and plant them. Then all of a sudden, some of them come up.
Huh.
They used to. They grow everywhere around here.
Yeah,
more than you don't see too many. They all usually grow around the creek.
Pawpaws, yeah, they grow up here too. You can plant them in your yard. And the one nice thing about pawpaws is that they can produce fruit in the shade. All right, what else I got? So next I have Mr. Napier. He's a blacksmith on Highway 221 in Harlan County near Pine Mountain Settlement School. He's talking mostly about his attempts to build a very large anvil. He was hoping to build the largest anvil in the world. But I looked online. Apparently there's somebody in Illinois trying to build the 2-ton anvil, I think. Anyway, here's Mr. Napier.
You like old-time tools?
Yeah. You got some? You got some. What do you got?
Got some go back to about 1760 in there.
Wow.
And that every tool in here I've actually used, you know.
So have you just accumulated since you've been around, or how long have you been around doing this?
Well, I've been blacksmithing about ever since I've been about 7 years old, 6 or 7.
Uh-huh.
We've used everything in here but that one broad axe right there. Right. That's what they used to hew out the old cabins with, the big beams. You up Pine Mountain Settlement School?
Yeah.
You see the old creek home there?
That's what that cabin was
hewed out with, something similar to that.
Okay.
There's your 30-pound hammer if they get too,
well,
others are too little.
What do you need? Use a 30-pound hammer for?
Well, I didn't use it too much, just about 2 or 3 legs.
Breaking your back?
But now we was beating that big horn of the anvil out there. I had a big fire pit there in the middle of the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I jerked that 30-pounder out, and them guys hit about 2 or 3 licks with it, and they said, "Hey, you don't put that up, we're going home, you know." And they said, "Bring in them 20-pounders out here, buddy. Put that thing back." But now, them guys, I had 5 of them beating on that horn, trying to draw it out, and boys, I hit swings the hair back in their ears and everything. It was hot. But now the next thing is to finish up the anvil, grind it off, and then go weigh it a final time. That should be the last time to weigh it.
Now, how you going to put it on your truck to take it places?
Well, now, what I'll probably have to do is buy a bigger truck.
I mean, how you going to pick it up to put it
in? We'll get a big record here.
Yeah.
Big record to pick it up. I've got a trailer down there. You saw it, didn't you?
Yeah.
But it'll hold up to about 7 tons, so it should handle it. But now, The truck weighs 6,000 pounds. The animal weighs about 64 somewhere through there.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's... I've been told that you need more weight pulling than you got behind you, you know. But now that couldn't be true because the tractors and trailers pull in big D11 dozers and everything,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's in the gearing mechanism, you know, of everything. Right?
I ride a bike in a trailer with 300 pounds and I only have like a 200 pounds of me and gear, me, motor and equipment hauling 300, yeah. 400 pounds of stuff. It's not a problem. Well, it's not really a problem.
Well, now, we had a friend, his cousin, and he wanted to go to Alaska because land was dirt cheap up our way back years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he bought him a school bus or something from the county when they bidded them off. And he put about four or five different transmissions under that thing. And, man, I mean, he'd run 100 miles an hour in a dirt cheap, you know. He'd just keep right on the changing gears, you know. But, now he's a mechanical genius, you know. I mean, he really knew his stuff there, yeah.
How'd you get the idea to build a big anvil?
Buddy, I've hunted around everywhere. I wanted to find me a 1,000-pound one to beat around on, what have you. And everywhere I go, I'd be about a week or two too late. And all they'd have is this, it said, you're a picture of it, you know. I said, well, I'm tired of that. I'll just go home and build one. But now, we wasn't going to do nothing like this. We was going to do about a 3,500-pounder, you know. And
uh-huh.
I just kind of got carried away a little.
What'd you say this is, 6,500 pounds?
Between 6,000 and 6,400.
I
just got carried away on this anvil project and just kind of quit everything. You know, it's about starved me out. Oh, there's the pattern to the big anvil. See that silver there?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it got growing pains after we went from that. I said, hey.
So how do you make it bigger? Like, what did you start out with? Do you, like, carve it away or add to it?
That's made out of 6-inch D9 counterweights. Each one weighed about a ton each. So it's actually made out about 8 or 9 pieces there, all laminated together.
Uh-huh.
And got a D10 bulldozer cutting edge on top for a good wire plate steel, you know. I just dread getting that damn thing to take in weight, pardon the language.
Where are you going to weigh it at?
Well, I'd love to go down to Middlesboro to the pilot station because they got a universal scales.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for all 48 states, mm-hmm. you know, and it will be extremely accurate because they check that thing daily, you know.
What about one of these here truck stops?
Well, I got a scales up here, up on the mountain at the quarry, and then one down on Straight Creek. But see, the other one is state and federal certified, you know. So if I'm going to enter it in the Genesis Book of World Record, that'd be a better record than, you know, a state or what have you, you know. But now, hopefully, I got a guy coming from Canada. He's supposed to be in today or tomorrow. Now, he's wanting to learn how to blacksmith a little bit, so I will build a fire. But now, I told him no matter what, I'm going to finish the anvil first before I do get into anything. Because, you know, this year will be gone again on me, buddy.
Huh? Yeah.
It's just wore me out, you know.
Last night I dreamt I went down to the office to get my payday like I done before. Them old cutsy vines had covered up the doorway, and there was trees and grass, well, a growing right through the floor. Never thought I'd pray to hear the tipple roar, but Lord, how I wish that grass could change to money. Them greenbacks fill my pockets once more. I was born and raised at the mouth of the desert holler. Coal cars roared and rumbling past my door. Now they're standing rusty, rolling empty, and the yelling don't stop here anymore.
And that was Gene Ritchie. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM, Northampton. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5. And coming up at 5 o'clock is Democracy Now! Coming up on Saturday, November 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon, is Northampton Reuse Committee's Fall Recycling Rally. That'll be at Smith Oak on Locust Street in Northampton. So for this recycling rally, there's going to be bulky, rigid plastic drop-off, swap, and recycling. Nothing flexible or crinkly, and no PVC. So things like laundry baskets, pet carriers, tubs, totes. Or if anyone has any 18-gallon Rubbermaid roughneck tote lids, you can let me know. Let pedal people know. We always need lids for the 18-gallon Rubbermaid roughneck totes. Anyway, so you can bring them to the rigid plastic swap on Saturday, November 7th. Also, for this recycling rally, you can bring large white chunks of styrofoam. Must be rigid, dry, and clean. I guess they'll be collecting that. And there will be document shredding, a limit of 2 curbside recycling size boxes. And you can bring bicycles if you have extra bicycles you want to donate to Bikes Not Bombs. And Bikes Not Bombs also requests if you can bring $3 per bike donation to help offset shipping expenses. You can also bring bikes to the bike lab and donate them there. Actually, bikes that we get at the bike lab, we'll eventually give them to Bikes Not Bombs if there's more than we can redistribute here in Northampton. This is just a little steel drum from the Knoxville, Tennessee Farmers Market. When I went south and got off the bus, there I was in Knoxville, Tennessee. And here was something else there in Knoxville at the Farmers Market that I read and liked.
There's a monument dedicated to women's suffrage in downtown Knoxville, Tennessee, in Market Square. There's a quote on it by Abigail Scott Duniway, who was a suffragist in the 1870s. In Tennessee, she says, "The young women of today, free to study, to speak, to write, to choose their occupation, should remember that every inch of this freedom was bought for them at a great price. The debt that each generation owes to the past, it must pay to the future."
I want to say a couple things about mushrooms. Actually, yesterday I found a giant puffball in a yard that I was raking. It was like the size of my head. Brought it home to eat, and my housemate cooked it up, and we ate it. It was delicious. So look out for mushrooms. Make sure they're edible. When I was in Kentucky, my niece found a mushroom. So here's my niece Milka talking about that mushroom.
Mm-hmm. Milka, I feel like one of your special skills is your power of observation. I feel like you often notice things, whether you're on the school bus or walking down the driveway or going through the woods or wherever, I feel like you notice things that other people don't. And can you tell me about something special you noticed last week walking back from school?
I noticed it was kind of big, but it was a mushroom. It was on the side of the driveway, and I was just, like, walking down, and I saw a mushroom, and I just turned my head because I like to look around.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we do it because Bappy's hiding somewhere. So I saw the mushroom, although I saw it there for a few days. And then I showed it to Ruthie, and then she started to, she took a piece off.
When we went to look at it, can you describe it?
Yeah, it was like a vegetable.
Yeah, we looked it up and we decided it was called a giant cauliflower mushroom.
Yeah, and we saw if it was edible or not.
Yeah, we asked Mama for help and Mama looked it up in the book because it was a big mushroom. And a mushroom that big, I want to eat it if I can.
Yeah.
Have it for dinner, cook it up for everybody. Mama felt like it was edible.
And then we ate it.
How was it?
Delicious.
Thanks, my niece Milka, for sharing that. Here's another clip I have. So one day, my dad dropped me off at his church. He was going to church, and I was going somewhere else on my bicycle. And I met a man walking through the church parking lot. He was just like walking across town. And somehow we just started talking. And we got to talking about bikes. And he told me his name was Utah. Here he is.
So have you been biking around the country, or you just bike around Middlesbrough?
Yeah, I bike around the country all the time. I wish I could have me a route, you know, go plumb west. I'd go plumb to west on a bike.
Uh-huh.
Get me the best one day, or, you know, where to move real fast.
You know, I want to interrupt this clip and just say that there aren't very many people that bicycle in that area. So for me to run across this random person who also expressed a love for bicycles, it really warmed my heart.
What do
camp
out too, you know.
You know, there's some trails. Like, there's a trail that goes from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, all the way to Washington, D.C. It's off-road, just for bikes and hikers. It's for 320 miles. That's pretty awesome.
That's what I like to do.
Can I just ask you, I wonder if you could share about how you see bicycles as being an important way to show one's love for the earth.
Yeah, that's what I'm showing them, but they won't listen.
Mm-hmm.
They say they want to do their way, you know, cars. I said, once you people get on a bicycle, they done that back in the old days.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I said, I can't stand to ride a bicycle, you know, like that.
Uh-huh.
They want to run and get in a car. I said, you don't get no exercise that way. You're sitting all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I said, in a car. I said, you ain't getting no exercise for your stomach, for your heart, your mind, your brain. Your brain is the most important thing in the world. They think they got the education they got.
Uh-huh.
I said, you people ain't got no education.
Uh-huh. How do you connect that with, you know, like religion, thinking about religion and people trying to, you know, so like you and I, you know, we think about love for the earth and showing love like that by living peaceful.
Don't see that. They preach it's a false religion, the way I believe they're done.
Uh-huh.
What did Isaiah write? Mm-hmm. He said, you confess me with your lips, but your heart is far from me.
Mm-hmm.
He said that about all these churches.
Mm-hmm.
21 chapter of Ezekiel, it shows, he says, all my holy place is unclean.
Mm-hmm.
And then 23rd chapter of Jeremiah,
mm-hmm.
he says, I never sent you prophets, you preachers, you sent yourselves. If I didn't have love for you, you know, and I see you get hurt and I let you lay and just keep on going,
mm-hmm.
that's a bad servant. If I grab you and hold you in my arms and
mm-hmm.
carry you for a mile, I said, that's a good heart and love right there.
Uh-huh. And you were also saying how you feel like riding a bike and caring for the environment is a way to express
love.
Yeah,
that's the way they do. That's the way they need to be doing for the planet Earth, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
God told them to keep the environmental clean, but they ain't done it. Huh?
Your name's Utah.
Utah, yeah.
Well,
you know, I got it in me.
Uh-huh.
You can take care of yourself.
Yeah, nice to see you.
So I'm going to play a little bit of Iris Dement here.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. Mystery be. Some say once gone, you're gone forever, and some say you're gonna come back. Some say you rest in the arms of the Savior who fends in the ways you lack. Some say that they're coming back in a garden, bunch of carrots and little sweet peas. Think out, just let the mystery be.
Iris Dement. I got one more clip from Kentucky. This is my niece Milka again. She's talking about hair.
So Milka, can you tell me something you like about having your hair done?
I like it more in the end because you can walk around and stretch your legs after sitting in a stool all that time.
How long does it typically take?
It takes 3 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm. And who does it?
My mom.
Mm-hmm. Or does Abuelita do it sometimes?
It depends what kind of hair for how long it takes. Mm. I mean, what she's going to do.
Yeah. Do you enjoy the time together with your mom, whoever's doing it?
Sometimes.
And then?
Until she gets mad.
What does she get mad about?
When I'm doing the beads, she gets mad that I don't get the beads ready.
Uh-huh.
Or if I don't turn the right direction.
Uh-huh. Sometimes you're busy watching a movie during this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you like to do other people's hair?
Yeah.
Which do you like more, doing other people's hair or having your own hair done?
I think it would be doing other people's hair.
Are you more in charge, and if you want to stop, you can stop? Or?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for doing my hair.
You're welcome.
Are you looking for customers for your hair shop? Fancy hair?
Yeah, but right now it's closed.
Okay.
I found a boy today. It looks so good, why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el bike lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday bike lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the bike lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
So I have one more clip that I want to play for today's show. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM, Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. So this last clip, I was emptying the Florence downtown trash barrels last night, and I ran into a man, Ruben. He's getting together a Halloween party this Friday, Halloween party to support the fight against injustice. I'll let him talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, there's going to be a Halloween party at the World War II Club, 50 Conn Street in Northampton. Suggested donation is $5. There's going to be food there, raffles.
That's this Friday, the 23rd?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. If you believe in justice, if you believe that people shouldn't be bullied in the workplace, in the streets, in a household, this is the place you want to go and support this cause. And one of the things that I would like to bring up is, if you're a bully in any way, shape, or form, please, you know, study yourself and don't show up. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to want you there. Don't. And I believe people change, but don't do it at my party.
Mm-hmm. So if people come to the Halloween party, can they find out more there?
For legal reasons, there's some stuff I can't say. I am worried of retaliation. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'll be more than happy to discuss a few things. And that's it.
All right. Thanks for sharing.
All right.
Sorry that you're going through this.
Yeah. Thank you for interviewing me. And I'll be back.
All right.
Give you an update.
All right.
See where this goes.
Yeah. So you want to just tell me about your experience, some of your experiences, and what's going on for you?
Yes. Hi, my name is Ruben Nunez Jr. I am a lineman for a power company. I've been here now almost 4 years in Northampton, Florence area. And unfortunately, my experience here was not good. I like to say that my whole life, I pretty much been pro-cop. My dad used to work in New York, and he owned a tire shop, and he used to fix the flat tires for the NYPD. One of the things he did. And, in Springfield, I pretty much grew up in an Irish pub, O'Brien's Corner, and I always had a good experience there. I knew a lot of cops there. They were great to me. And, there's some good cops here, but I had an experience with a few of them, and their behavior was unacceptable. Unacceptable, period. I've been asked to identify what I had in my bag. When I put my keys in my bag, I've been asked if I had permission to drive my mother-in-law's car, because she has a European name, if you will. Mm-hmm. My wife is white, and we're not together at this time, but still, we're friends and stuff. And it's just unacceptable. I did have one police officer basically tell me that he can pull me over anytime he wants. He opened my door when he did it, and I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. I just asked to speak to his captain, and he told me no. Mm-hmm. It was late at night, and I was kind of nervous about that, because at late at night, mm-hmm. what is a black man going to tell the story? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be my word against theirs?
Get yourself to downtown Northampton, Mass. on Friday nights, where a party has been going on for 26 years at the Valley's only all-ages, shoe-free, substance-free, alcohol-free, smoke-free dance spree. Six resident DJs, DJ Liquid G, DJ July, DJ Wheeler, DJ Alan S, DJ Zoe, and DJ Root, that's me, with a handle on booty-shaking tunes from yesterday and today, club, disco, hip-hop, world beat, funky breaks, progressive trance, oldies, swing, salsa, waltzes, and more. Part of the larger Dance New England network, Dance Spree has been providing a home for a vibrant and diverse community of folks who love to dance to a variety of music in a healthy atmosphere. Come check it out. Volunteers are always appreciated. Info online at dancespree.org or come by 8:30 p.m. Friday nights, 25 Main Street, 4th floor, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts.
This is Ruthie from Pedal People with a public service announcement. If you frequent downtown Northampton or Florence and you pass by the recycling and trash bins on the street, the public ones, I'm here to let you know that cups are not recyclable. No plastic cups, no paper cups, no styrofoam cups, no clear cups, red cups, blue cups, yellow cups, no insulated cups. Because if you put cups in the recycling bin, it means either I pick them out or someone at the sorting facility picks them out in Springfield, or it contaminates the whole load too much that the whole load is considered trash. Or if you can just bring your own cup altogether and not have disposable cups, that'd be even better. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your cooperation.
You are listening to Democracy Now! On